98.3 FM KIHR, News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI, and GorgeRadio.com present the Mid-Columbia Today Show with Mark Bailey.
Mid-Columbia Today is brought to you by GorgeNet, Gorge Recovery Service, and Skyline Hospital.
Now, here's Mark Bailey.
8:06 in the morning. Good morning. I'm Mark Bailey. We've arrived at Friday, the 18th of April, heading into an Easter weekend. Hopefully you've got something nice planned. It'll be a very nice day today. Might see a little shower tomorrow, according to the forecast. And then Sunday, we're back to sunny. We're going to be some strong winds. Today looks great. I got to be at the ballpark this afternoon, so I got to feel pretty good right now. That's a good place to be on a nice day like today. But first, we've got a talk show to do. We've got some things to talk about this morning. Expecting Jeff Helfrich. I just say he's on the phone. Unfortunately, he's on the phone. I'm talking right now. So he's calling from Salem. I'm getting his number down. If you know Jeff, let him know I'm talking on the radio right now. I will call him immediately here after I'm done with our opening segment. I apologize, Jeff. He must not be here today. He's been at home lately. I kind of expected this today. He's probably down in Salem. I will call him as soon as we're done here. And I just realized something. I didn't bring in our opening segment. I don't have today in history in front of me. That's not good. It means I don't know what to say here at this point. You may just have to do without it today, to be honest. Oh, yeah. And not like it's been that kind of. I've been doing a lot of stuff. I always do a lot of stuff between news segments in here. I'm a busy person with my job here. And I must have left on the printer or something. I'm just realizing that. Anyway, we'll talk to Jeff first. I'll call him here in a moment. And then the second half of the show, Marty Cantola Dane will come in and visit. That's what's planned this morning. Well, I'll tell you, instead of what I normally do, I will mention this again. I mentioned this at the end of Mid-Columbia Mornings. If you are traveling Highway 26 today or planning to, maybe more importantly, if you're planning to, ODOT has sent us a note that Highway 26 is closed about 5 miles west of Garmin Camp due to a crash near milepost 48, about 24 miles east of Sandy, in an area where there are no local detours. The closure might last several hours this morning, so expect delays or use another route or postpone your trip if possible. Again, that is 5 miles west of Garmin Camp, Highway 26 closed near milepost 48 due to a crash. So keep that in mind if you're traveling toward that area today. Anyway, in the morning, I will call Jeff Helfrich, and we will get him on the phone, and we'll talk. We'll do that after this.
For over 20 years, Hood River Dental has delivered winning smiles and has grown with you here in the Gorge. Hood River Dental provides a comprehensive approach to care for both children and adults, including general cosmetic, ortho Invisalign, and core whitening, plus advanced therapies for TMJ and airway management. Is it time to get your teeth checked? Concerned with snoring? Call us at Hood River Dental with locations across from Jackson Park and on Belmont and Hood River. Hood River Dental, family-owned and community-focused. Your comfort is our priority.
At McCoy Holliston Insurance, we're proud to serve the Columbia River Gorge since 1946 with the same dedication to our clients that's made us your trusted choice for generations. Hi, this is Nicole. We're honored to be voted Best Insurance Agency in the Gorge 4 years in a row. Whether it's protecting your home, auto, business, farm, or planning for life's unexpected moments, our experienced team is here for you every step of the way. Call us at McCoy Holliston Insurance in White Salmon today and experience the service you deserve.
What's on your to-do list? Pick up groceries? Water your plants? How about getting vaccinated? We can help you check that off.
You've got this. The Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging, has partnered with community providers to make getting vaccinated your easiest to do.
You've got this.
With local vaccine events, access to transportation, in-home vaccinations, and on-site healthcare consultations, protecting yourself and your loved ones is not a chore anymore. So if you're age 60 plus or a person with a disability, get your yearly dose of confidence today.
You've got this.
Because we've got you. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging. Learn more at yougotthis.usaging.org.
You've got this.
Funded by the U.S. Administration for Community Living through a grant to U.S. Aging. This does not necessarily represent the views of ACL or the U.S. government.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River. AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR. News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI. And GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark.
It is 8:11 in the morning. I'm Mid-Columbia Today. We're happy to have with us on the phone from down in Salem, Oregon State, House District 52, Representative Jeff Helfrich. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing today?
Not bad. How are you doing?
You know, it's Friday. It's Good Friday, and I'm waiting for an Easter weekend to spend with the family. So it's a pretty good day so far.
But one of the differences from our previous conversations this session is that you are in Salem instead of back in the district in Hood River. So obviously, we're starting to get down to it, aren't we?
Yes, it's starting to get down to the nitty-gritty. Absolutely.
Well, a story came out yesterday because we've talked a lot about, you know, transportation. How do we pay for this? We know the state gas tax isn't going to be what it used to be, et cetera, et cetera. And then I see the story yesterday that apparently the study that was done that was kind of telling us that truckers are paying more than really they should and some other things apparently isn't that accurate. What's happening?
I haven't seen the brief on that. I've been waiting for our transportation vice chair, Shelley Bossart-Davis, is in there, and they haven't been able to digest all that yet. So I to give you an actual answer on that, I haven't had an opportunity to really review all that.
But it sounds like Eco Northwest, which conducted the study, and I'll know, I mean, they've done studies for governments in the state and the region. You know, local, county, they're well known. They do a lot of these. But apparently, according to an ODOT spokesperson, among what was done was they miscalculated the results because it treated costs to be paid over years due to bonding and said they would be paying a smaller amount of time. Some projects in the analysis should not have been in there. And I guess where I get to is not necessarily what happened particularly, but how is this going to impact this discussion? Because we were starting to begin to get the proposals, good or bad, and now all this would seem to be based on information that, you know, legislators were given that wasn't necessarily accurate.
As I navigate Salem, the information that you have in front of you sometimes, you think is accurate, then another report comes out, and that's where we start scratching our heads, like, well, what is the actual true information? What are the impacts, and what has the study been done? And how we all know that numbers can be manipulated in a manner that would frame it one, and it's a good in one way or bad another way. And you have to get to that neutral source that shows this is exactly what the problem is, and that's what I've kind of experienced with all, whether it's education, transportation, housing. Everybody's the numbers can be skewed one way or the other, but what is actually going on? I think that's the biggest thing that I think I get frustrated with is trying to figure out what the right report is. And if it is true that there's numbers are off and the impacts are wrong, then we have to go back to the drawing board and figure out where do we start over again.
And if that is the case, I guess what makes me concerned as a citizen. Is
as a taxpayer.
As a taxpayer. Yeah, as a taxpayer. Yes, that's true. Yeah, which is true, by the way. The concern for me becomes not so much, reports come out. I mean, I guess I've worked in this business long enough to know there are reports come out all over the place on everything, and some of them are good and some of them aren't. But my concern is this is such a vital issue, and we know we've got some frankly, ticking time bombs here as far as, you know, maintenance and repair and the ODOT fiscal situation, that any setback
seems to be is just... It causes a major problem when we try to figure out the budget of this state.
No, it... So there's three things are going on all at once that are true. You've got ODOT's issue, you've got the education funding issue, and then you've got the homeless issue. And then all those are large dollar ticket items. And when we look at ODOT, if we don't have the right numbers, I view this as three buckets: immediate, midterm, and long term. That immediate is how do we make sure we get the maintenance costs or get the maintenance dollars there? They need to be out there so our roads don't continue to crumble. And then that medium bucket is where do we figure out the funding sources and where do we cut and where do we find good sources there? And then the next one is that long term, that restructuring of ODOT. And they've tried some reforms, but some of those reforms just are taking too long, too slow. And you see this across the board with a lot of these agencies where the governor just fired the Oregon Public Defender's administrator, the lead commissioner on that. And so there's a lot of problems top down with our government right now. And we got to figure out where do we start? And we got to start with the basics of what is it going to cost to fix these roads and where does the money come from?
And I guess that leads to what do we do under the short term part that you mentioned? Because let's say medium and long term, the report gets changed, revised, whatever happens, and the discussion continues from there. But the short term, you know, we're starting to run down on what we'd like the length of this session to be. That you know you're going to have decisions you're going to have to make, and you may have to make it without this report. It looks like to me.
Right. I think for me, it's you make the best decision in the moment that you have with based upon the information you get. We have to fund some the maintenance. And so we have our next meeting is on Monday in transportation. We'll start getting work with the chairs and vice chairs, the co-chairs and vice chairs, to see where this is at and actually get the project. There's a person that's been assigned to kind of oversee all the transportation stuff, a non-partisan staff to help kind of coordinate all this. And we have to sit down and have that conversation. And that's, I think there's a meeting for me scheduled on Monday to start that conversation and what that looks like just now, this new report that came out.
So as we await all that and what has to happen there, I'll ask you about something that was expressed to me on this show a couple days ago by Hood River County School District Superintendent Bill Newton, which I'm sure you're vaguely aware that they are making cuts right now. They're cutting teaching positions, et cetera, for a variety of factors. And he mentioned one of their concerns right now, the variables, and they always are dealing at the start of a biennium with the variable what the legislature will put the final number at for their funding. But he also pointed out they've had a concern about what happens if Medicare and Medicaid cuts come from the federal level, what that might do in the decision-making process for the state's overall budget, the legislative level, that might end up impacting the K-12 numbers because monies get redistributed. Is that something we might see if we see Medicaid and Medicare changes at the federal level?
It could be. I know I talked with co-chair Representative Sanchez and then Senator Lieber on Ways and Means. It was a couple of days ago, and they are very concerned about our budget, and we rely on a lot of federal funding for different programs, and if those budget cuts come through, where do we make those? It's more than haircuts. It's, you know, it's 10% cuts across the board in service deliveries, and that's just not through education. It's through the whole budget, and that's when I'm sitting on Ways and Means, the public safety subcommittee of that, we're asking the agency heads, department heads, to say, where do these cuts come from? At the end of the slide, they don't like talking about it, but it's going to be, you know, FTE positions because those are the most costly positions in some of these programs. And that could translate down into, like we just talked about, education or the Medicaid, Medicare dollars and, mm-hmm. and providing those dollars.
Mm-hmm. How, as long as we went through maybe the more larger picture of what the federal situation could do to the state, I mean, how do you plan for that particular? I mean, there's still some time in your session that, you know, if something happened in the couple of weeks, you guys would still be there and dealing with it. But I would think there's also this, maybe there would be this lingering concern about what happens if, okay, we adjourn, you know, toward late June, let's say, and in July they do something, which I guess could happen at any time, but it seems particularly acute this time. I mean, do you have to begin to plan contingencies somewhat in all this?
So we do have the e-board to help with emergencies. There's not a lot of dollars sitting in the e-board, but there's always we could end session sine die end of June, and then knowing that we could roll into a special session to come back in and look at how to fix these problems. So there's mechanisms in place that we could get called back into session and figure out where we need to fix the problems or readjust the budgets. That can always happen. The hope is not to, but those are possibilities that could happen.
You mentioned here, as we were talking, the news of yesterday, by the way, of the Public Defense Commission executive director being replaced yesterday, effective immediately, according to the governor's office. And apparently, we're still sitting there with the number the governor threw out was more than 4,000 defendants in Oregon, still don't have attorneys assigned.
Right.
And maybe we don't notice it as much here, because I don't get the impression that in the mid-Columbia, the crunch is like it is in our larger areas of Oregon. But is this something that necessarily a director change is going to impact that much?
It's about leadership, and it's about how they implement their style and their strategy. And I think it... So how that works, there's the commission, and then there's the... basically the top administrator, if you will, or the department head and or director head. And so they answer to the commission. The commission works in conjunction with the governor, kind of the separate setup. But at the end of the day, if you don't have the right leadership, you're not going to get good results. And I sat in those committees before, and you kind of keep hearing the same answers over and over again. We need more time. We need more money. It's like you only have so much money, and you only have so much time. When are we going to see results? And I think the money's there. It's the getting the attorneys and trying to drill down exactly where these dollars are being spent, because the state has a constitutional authority to provide defense services for people that have been arrested. And so it's unlike the counties that the DA is an elected official, and then the staff is paid for by the state and to have the deputy district attorneys. They and the counties get the money for that. We don't have a system. They have to go out to these private law firms and provide these lawyers and some other things. It's pretty complicated once you have to unpack it. But at the end of the day, we don't know where some of that money goes, to the consortiums that they use, or to how much billable hours are being out there, and how much of it goes to administrative costs, how much is actually going to the attorneys. And it's, I sit there and listen to these presentations that they give us, and it's a complicated, drawn-out thing, and you have to sit there and really follow it line by line to see where things are going at. And it's, all the agencies are this way. And the Public Defense Commission's been this way for a while, and they've gotten more money, but the same results have happened. And that's the problem. We can't keep throwing money at a problem, and it's not getting fixed.
I do wonder, maybe you've heard this. You know, I don't spend as much time as courtrooms in my job as I used to. I mean, I used to spend a lot more time in those. It never looked like to me to being a public defense attorney was necessarily the greatest job in the world. I mean, it looked like to me it was a pretty darn tough job. Are we producing enough? Are we getting enough attorneys to fill all the roles for this? I mean, is part of this just a would you want to do this as a part of your career type of question?
I can't speak for upcoming attorneys and where they're at, but I would say that the Supreme Court came out, and I can't remember how they exactly did it, but they made it a little bit easier to pass the bar, not in the sense of lower the threshold, but to bring in more attorneys to streamline that process for accreditation. And you have public sector and private sector, and generally private sector attorneys are making more money than the public sector attorneys, and so that's the cost drivers. And then we hear about this shortage of people everywhere, not just attorneys, but prosecutors, police officers, firefighters, go down the line, a list of things. And why is that? Are people not wanting to live in Oregon? That seems to be a driving thing, other than people think they can make money being influencers on Instagram or something. So maybe the appeal of the job is not the same. And do you work through your attorney schools and you have your debts you have to pay back, because going to school is not cheap? And, you know, is it more lucrative to get into the private practice? And it seems to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Got a couple more minutes left here. I mean, I was kind of going through. It's kind of a busy news day yesterday out of Salem in the Oregon legislature. What have you been focusing on the last little bit?
So sitting in, listening to the OIA, or excuse me, the public defender presentation, DOJ, the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, Rayfield, came in and proposed his budget, and there's some significant cuts to that budget if it happened, and in the realm of paying attention to the sex trafficking and the human trafficking that's going on, that if we don't keep those things funded, they could lose investigators and lose these opportunities to have, you know, these kids that are getting kidnapped and getting put into these terrible trades, you know, the sex trade industry. And we got to make sure those are funded and protect our most vulnerable. And that was one of the things that we're focused on there. And then obviously the transportation is trying to figure out where that's at. I'm still focusing on trying to get money for a bridge for Hood River. And the other things that I think are sitting out there are some policy issues that aren't, you know, the top of the mind of people, but some things that can actually fix some issues that people have identified. But, you know, transportation's been looming. When I was leader, you know, what was looming was Measure 110 reforms. And so I think as the first chamber deadline happened, now we're seeing where things are at. And of course, you've got a lot of gun bills coming out out of the Senate right now. That's got, you know, people concerned.
Also, I did just see a little note here. I'll just ask, because we have a couple minutes left here, just for a general thought. Did I see a story where it sounded like, because Mayor, there were a lot of bills introduced this year, and I forget the exact number, but it was mm-hmm. fairly mind-boggling. That there was a proposal to perhaps limit the amount of bills in a session. Did I see that right?
Yes, Speaker Fahey put that forth. I was working with at the time Speaker Rayfield and then Leader Fahey. We had that conversation because there's some legislators that will write 100, 200 plus bills, and there'll be placeholder bills, they'll be as relating to speed bumps, something, whatever it is, and have those as to use as messaging, if you will. And it costs around, the figure I heard 2 years ago is $2,500 to $3,000 to draft a bill. And so if you have one legislator that's drafting 100 bills at $3,000 a shot, that's a lot of money. And there's only so many attorneys in the legislative council that can draft bills, and they're constantly working on things. And the idea was to give, you know, somebody 25 or 30 bills to write, and then limit the governor's ability to write governor bills, agency bills to be reduced. And what that would cause is if you have an agency that has a particular issue that they want addressed, or a constituent or a business, they would have to find a legislator that's willing to use one of their bills to use that, and then knowing that they have to go lobby and get support for this bill so it just doesn't die, and so you're not creating a bunch of paperwork. And I support it, but there's colleagues of mine that say they don't like it. It limits their voice on how they can craft policy and affect change, and at least put legislation out that would contrast them from somebody else.
8:29 in the morning. Jeff Helfrich, Oregon State Representative. Jeff, thanks for doing this again. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Have a good weekend. 8:29 in the morning. News coming up next.
Hi, this is Dwayne from Genesis Septic Solutions. We offer all things septic, including septic pumpings, septic repairs, septic installs, and we do both commercial and residential. If you're having septic problems, give us a call at 541-993-7777. We have quality employees, and remember to look for us in the big green trucks. If you're having septic problems, give us a call at 541-993-7777.
At Gill's Point S Tire and Auto Service, we're here to make sure your vehicle is prepared for whatever the road brings. We make it easy with tires and auto service under one roof. Wipers, batteries, brakes, oil changes, alignments, tires, wheels, and more. Plus, we'll give you a free Gill's Digital Vehicle Report with every visit, so you always know what's going on with your car. So wherever the road takes you, there's no stress with Gill's Point S. Visit us in the Dalles and Hood River, or schedule online at gillspointstire.com.
No stress with Point S.
Do you want to help continue to make Hood River an amazing place to visit? Visit Hood River is accepting applications for its 2025 Community Investment Matching Program. The program has the goal of supporting our thriving local economy and will award up to $40,000 in grants in the current funding cycle. If you run a local business or program that helps make Hood River a top tourist destination, go to the Visit Hood River website to find more information on how to apply. The program has awarded over $78,000 since 2022. Past grants have been awarded to support outdoor gallery installations, to a nonprofit focused on water sport activities and safety, and for online advertising for lodging properties to boost visitation. You can contact Katie Cavlob at her email, katie@visithoodriver.com, to learn more. Guidelines are available at visithoodriver.com in both English and Spanish. Applications are accepted until April 11th at 5 p.m. Applicants must be able to meet matching funding requirements. Go to visithoodriver.com for all the details.
Coffee for Mid-Columbia Today guests is provided by Hood River Coffee Roasters, the gorgeous local coffee roasters on Tucker Road on the Heights in Hood River.
8:31 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. Let's take a look at what is in the news. We talked about this a moment ago. Governor Tina Kotek firing Oregon's public defense leader amid an ongoing shortage of public defense attorneys in the state, announcing new leadership. Jessica Campy is out as executive director of the Oregon Public Defense Commission, in is Ken Sanchagrin. He was the executive director of the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. That is effective immediately. Kotek calling it unacceptable that more than 4,000 defendants in Oregon do not have attorneys assigned. Oregon schools will soon have something they've never had before, more than a year to plan for summer school, with a promise of consistent funding from the legislature. It comes, though, with one condition. The money should be spent on programs to get students reading and writing at grade level. The Oregon Capitol Chronicle reporting the Senate passed two bills from the House nearly unanimously. One appropriates $35 million to summer learning grants in 2025 and again in 2026. And another establishes which programs qualify for the grants. And the bills now await the governor's signature. She's indicated she will sign them. Oregon State Police dealt with a pair of incidents involving high rates of speed on I-4 west of Hood River Wednesday. In the morning, the OSP reports the vehicle took off at over 100 miles per hour after a trooper attempted a traffic stop and witnessed it recklessly cutting in between other traffic and going into the dirt before exiting at Cascade Locks. Vehicle was later found with a search revealing drugs and paraphernalia. The driver, though, wasn't located. Then in the evening, an SUV was stopped after going 96 miles per hour on the freeway. A 52-year-old Portland woman charged with DUI. Meanwhile, the Washington State Senate's passing a bill attempting to stop habitual speeders, as the House passing a bill to require certain drivers to install an intelligent speed assistance device that limits the car to the posted speed limit of the area they are in. Drivers with the device will be allowed to exceed the speed limit up to three times a month. It is sunny today. Highs low to mid-70s and a light wind. 48 degrees in Hood River, 47 in the Dalles.
Hi, it's Melissa at Del Carpine Automotive. You know how long 10 minutes is? It's how long it takes me to wrangle my dog into the car most days. Yep, it's also how close we are to our old location. We are now neighbors to adopt a dog. Just a quick drive up the hill. Same team, same top-notch service, and a bigger space to handle all makes and models. Have you been putting off getting the scheduled maintenance done on your vehicle? Come see us. At Del Carpine Automotive, no job is too big or too small. We work on them all, and we are family-owned and Columbia Gorge strong.
It's official. Newsmax has become a news giant. It's even listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Over 40 million Americans regularly turn to Newsmax for the news they need to know. They're tuning into the Newsmax channel on all major cable systems. They watch Newsmax, too, on all streaming platforms. They go online to Newsmax.com for breaking headlines. Millions more have downloaded the free Newsmax app on their smartphone and home TV. Reuters says Newsmax is one of the top news brands in America. Even President Trump says Newsmax is terrific, and he's watching. Tens of millions of Americans like you have made the switch to Newsmax for the news they can trust. So make the switch today. You won't ever look back.
Mid-Columbia Today is a public affairs program of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River, AM 1340 and 98.3 FM KIHR, News Radio 1300 and 103.9 KACI, and GorgeRadio.com. Now, back to Mark.
8:35 in the morning, Marty Cantola-Dane joins us. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning, Mark.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well.
You asked me if I was ready for a philosophical discussion today.
Yeah, you know, it's Friday. And once a month, I like to throw things out there just to kind of make people think a little bit more going into the weekend.
Point your mic a little further down. I think the last person on it, which was probably me yesterday, was taller.
I think almost everybody I know is taller.
Oh, not necessarily, but there you go.
Thanks.
So what do I want to talk about? What do you got on your mind?
Well, thank you for asking. I have a mediation training coming up next month, and I've been doing these for a long time. And people come in wanting to be, they want to be better at handling negotiation, better at handling conflict. And it's kind of a self-selected group, one's got to say, because you got to really want to be an adult learner. You got to want to be changing your ways a little bit in order to do a training like this as a participant. And I was thinking about it the other day that one of the main things we focus on is getting people more comfortable in negotiation and conflict situations. Like literally as professionals in the field, we are focusing a lot of effort on making sure that people will engage in a healthy manner, to not be afraid of conflict, not run away from it, not try to shut it down, but rather to lead into the discussion and try and figure out how to get more out of conflict. Having said that, we kind of don't focus as much on people who are already good at it.
Okay.
Yeah. However, you think about this, people who get into negotiations and they usually get what they want. They have the ability to steamroll people. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're good at it.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between steamrolling and good negotiating.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, steamrolling, usually to steamroll somebody, you have to be in a, you have to have a leverage position that is fairly strong. Perhaps you're in a position of power, et cetera, that allows you to do that, even though you if you do it, you better do it sparingly, because eventually the people you steamroll, when it goes the other direction, they're going to remember. So that's why steamrolling somebody in a negotiation really isn't, I think, for most people who think through these things, a good option. You don't want to go there.
Granted. So I put out the most extreme so you can say no to it.
Sure, okay.
And yet people who are used to getting what they want out of a negotiation also sometimes find that the relationships don't stay as strong. And I like to think about sports analogies once in a while because they're set up to be a zero-sum game, most of them.
Okay. You know,
there's a winner, there's a loser, there's
rules. The result of a contest, yes.
Absolutely. And yet there are some sports that make a different sort of goal. Like if the goal is for the team to win and you have multiple players, you've got to figure out how to work together to get that team win, right? I was watching Formula One the other day.
Okay.
Which I don't say this much in public, but I am a fan of this very bizarre sport, and it's Netflix's fault.
Okay, you watch it the is. Netflix show. It makes sense.
It hooked me.
Because I'm trying to figure out, of all the sports, and I've known you for years, of all the sports to care about. Now, my dad's an auto race fan, but he didn't watch Formula One. He watches NASCAR. He grew up 60s California cars, so that, and I didn't share this at all. And Formula One is maybe one of the most boring things I've ever watched, because nothing. It's basically just a technical engineering exercise.
Absolutely.
And it's set up for very little passing. Whatever. But anyway, fair. I digress. You got me going, so go ahead.
That's okay. Well, if I could do this and talk about baseball, I would, but okay, I don't quite have... Maybe you can come up with the baseball version.
I'll try.
It would help. So I watch Netflix Drive to Survive, but then I also watch the actual races. And there's this thing going on with the McLaren team.
Yeah.
Where they have two drivers that are really good, and they have occasionally been pretty controversial, like maybe their one driver is in the lead, but they want the other one to get the points. And so they actually reach out on the radio and say, hey, you gotta give this one up to the other guy.
That happens at every level of racing. This happens in NASCAR, it happens in IndyCar, et cetera.
So I'm watching Drive to Survive, and there's an interview with Lando Norris, and he's talking about how hard it is to actually collaborate when you're in the car, you're going 200 miles an hour, and your entire goal of your life has been set up to win that race.
Yep.
But he's being asked to think differently in those moments and figure out a way to allow his teammate to win. Now, it's not all that different from like the Tour de France or something along those lines. You've got to help each other, right?
Everything I've known in NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula One, and Tour de France that you just mentioned, partially because of the element we're talking about here, are a reason why I cannot stand it. Because I want every driver to try to win. I do. It be on their own. Okay, go. I've got her in hysterics now, you know. I'm winning in a rare time with your segment today here on this show, apparently.
This is so bizarre.
Yeah.
There must be another sport out there that does this. But I'm like I said, I'm watching sports. I'm trying to figure out how do I connect the joy of conflict with actually making everybody happy. Because I think that we've got a little bit of an imbalance going on where people who don't like to engage in conflict are saying, okay, I realize I have to do this. Help me figure out how to be successful. But we also have a loneliness epidemic in our world. And we have people who are sometimes not getting as much meaning out of it. And I do think that there is something to conflict and how we engage with it that can help people be happier.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, and I'm going to take you away from the high level sports. Okay,
fair enough.
Yeah, where it's all about money, winning, you know, those sort of things. Let's go down to our high school level.
Okay,
which it's conflict. It is.
Oh,
when
absolutely.
You play a game, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Every one of those kids wants to win that game badly, but there are other lessons being taught there, and after the game, you shake hands. If the schools are close enough, or in today's day and age with youth sports, they intermingle so much, you end up talking with your friends from the other team. And actually, the bonds get closer through the competition you've had.
Exactly.
That, to me, is a better parallel than any sport where really millions are at stake. And greed enters into it to a large extent. And certainly the Formula One example is not as it's become a little more popular in this country because of the theatrical show that has been engaged with Netflix. But I concede it's in Europe, it's the overriding automotive sport. And those companies that are backing the cars have so much riding on it because it's really their R&D. It's their research and development lab in a lot of ways. And it to be able to say, we won I think it's the Makers Champion. I forget the exact phrase for it. For whoever wins...
Constructors.
The Constructors Championship. Yeah. Gets them a lot of money.
Exactly.
For not necessarily for winning the championship. Actually, they lose money there. But what they gain in prestige and marketing is so great for them that it's a bit that, you know, that's a different world. That's I'm not, you know, but where you come down where the high school level, where that to me, that's a much more accurate place to be able to show where conflict can bring people together.
Oh, absolutely. I bring up this Formula One example because conflict is addictive. It is. And I've talked to lawyers who have had, you know, we were talking about in your last segment about lack of public defendants.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to many lawyers over the years in 20 years of mediations there at the table. And there's a thing to being in the heat of the conflict and kind of being a gladiator for your client,
mm-hmm.
that you want to get the win.
Yeah.
You know, you go in the courtroom and it's like, wow, that's mm-hmm. you're on stage. There's an adrenaline rush. There's all kinds of chemicals mm-hmm. going through you that makes you want to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing happens in sports. But when you're in that moment
mm-hmm.
is when you need to have the cognitive function and mm-hmm. you know preview ability mm-hmm. to say, wow, wait a second, is this really the win that I want, or is there something I can do to make this even better? And it you have to be able to shift cognitively, but if your mm-hmm. emotion and chemical makeup is so strong and so competitive in that mm-hmm. moment that you're going for the jugular,
mm-hmm.
then it's really hard to break that,
right?
And I think that's true on the high school field,
yeah, sure.
as well.
Oh yeah, I can tell you that from my personal experience as a younger person.
Yeah.
I was so competitive on that ball field. I mean, just ultra competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's stories I will not tell high school athletes that I know because I don't want them to think it's okay.
Yeah.
I never lashed out at anybody. Usually it was more internal. But, you know, if you ever see a major league game, it's occasionally somebody will take a baseball bat to the Gatorade bucket.
Oh, yeah,
in the
yeah.
dugout. I did that a couple times. I did in a high school situation. I did some things that, you know.
Yeah, because it's you're in the moment.
You're in the moment, exactly. It is, you know, my mom used to say, when you're making $1 million a year, you can start doing all this stuff. But
can we go back and talk to your mom?
I was just that competitive. I was that much of a competitor.
Yeah.
That I'm a competitor in this business.
And there's nothing at all wrong with that,
yeah.
right? It's just that piece that you were talking about, like after the game where the yeah. where you go out and you shake people's hands mm-hmm. and you say, hey, you know, good game, and what did you learn from it? That reflective part afterwards is so much easier at the high school level.
Well, yeah, it is.
Your ages, stages, and development, right?
And people who are good in that level and the coach, et cetera, understand and guide their players that way,
but,
you know.
But once you get out of school, mm-hmm. you don't have a coach anymore.
Right. Yeah, see, and I was lucky that I outgrew it. And that's one of the reasons I kind of quit playing softball on the recreational level when I was in my 20s. After I played at Washington State at a fairly high level. We won the campus championship. We were like third. We went to a state tournament, finished third at the top level. We were really good. And when I got here, I just wanted to play a little co-ed ball and meet women. You know, I was young. You know, that's what you do when you're young, et cetera. And there are some people who can never break out of that cycle. Mm-hmm. And I got tired of being around them. It's like, okay, I've done this. Probably because, okay, I've had success. I don't need this anymore mm-hmm. in my life. Now, I'm still real ultra competitive on the golf course with myself. Not with anybody else, just me. And that's always been a struggle to contain that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons that people play golf for so mm-hmm. long.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. yeah, there's so much to be gained, and it's hard.
Well, it took me 50 years to really get to the point where, okay, I'm okay at this.
Yeah.
I'm still not, but it also drives me. I'm never good enough. I mean, I just think I'll be satisfied when I can break 90 most of the time. Kind of got there, and I'm not satisfied. I'm
yeah.
not. But that's me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who sings that song.
Mm, yeah. Anyway, I probably have steered this way away from what you were going to talk about. And I got about 4 or 5 minutes left.
Well, I said that, you know, the philosophy of how do we approach conflict and what is it? I want to give it the respect it deserves as a way to gain, reach goals. It's a way to achieve amazing things. And mm-hmm. nothing changes unless we start changing things, right? So you have to be engaged in the change process of conflict. Mm-hmm. But I also want to speak to those people who are really good at it, who are very mm-hmm. comfortable, who've had a lot of success, and say, is that the way?
Well, here's where I think this it breaks away from the sports analogy. When you are playing a game, there are two teams. Winner, and somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. Occasionally, there's a tie, depending on what you're doing. So, success is defined by those two parameters. In most negotiations, whether it be business, which I tend to think of the most here, whether it be perhaps a family situation, a separation, divorce, child custody issues, etc., it's not necessarily about which team wins that's going to come up with. Somebody winning may not be the best solution. That in reality, everybody that is in that room, regardless of, quote, side they're on, are actually on the same team.
Or they should be.
Or they should be. And they have to figure out a way to progress together. Maybe using a parenting plan is a good example here. I'll see if that's true. What everybody in the room then at that point should be concerned with is what the child needs and what's best for that child, not necessarily what's best for them. And now you may have differing opinions of what's best for that child, but if you get together and work through a good, consistent, solid discussion, negotiation, you should be able to get to a pretty good place on that if you're not concerned about who is going to win. If it becomes about winning, yes, somebody may like the outcome, but it may not be a good outcome.
Yeah. So the more personal the stakes, the more it makes sense to try mm-hmm. and negotiate integrative negotiation, but like to try and create something that's going to benefit everybody is hard, and we only use it in certain circumstances. But I'd like to make the case that there are bigger things out there that actually do benefit all of us mm-hmm. and that break away from that concept that there has to be a loser in order for for you to win.
I'll use government in this case. I'll use like the Oregon legislature. The Oregon legislature, when it's come up with its best solutions, has always been through, frankly, what would seem to be from the outside some pretty bitter, tough, angry negotiations.
Absolutely.
But usually that's what brings, but usually those tough, I'll use more tough rather than angry or big. That's nice to get another way. Well, we've reached our best solutions when it has found, okay, there's a middle common ground here. Here's where we all want to get to, and then kind of work back to here's the steps we can take to get there. That's when it works the best. And I think the negotiation is the same way. I know one way I've always found when I've been in these situations is, okay, what's that other person looking for? What's the key for them? Because you may get to a point where if you have, they need one thing, you need another thing, and they're not necessarily at cross purposes here. That we can get to that, sometimes in negotiation can be about, they're looking to save a little money, maybe I'm looking to save time more than the money part of it. And you find that middle by being able to hit both those goals, mm-hmm. and then you get to a contract that both sides feel like is beneficial, whatever it might be.
Yeah. So being able mm-hmm. to figure out what's going on for the other person mm-hmm. necessitates knowing or caring about that person.
Yeah. Well, this gets back again to what I do here. I mean, when best interviews have come when you listen. If you don't listen, the interview usually stinks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does. That's what I find. And there are days I'm not as engaged as I should be. We're all human.
Right. And because people don't always say exactly what they think, and they don't always usually mm-hmm. insinuate or refer through some change in tone or... picking up on those subtleties is a much more engaging dialogue, especially for an interview. But
I need to run. I'm out of time. 8:54. Marty Cantola-Dane with us talking. I don't know if we talked about what we were going to talk about or not. I have no idea.
That's typical.
We'll come back and wrap it up after this.
Big changes are coming to home cooling systems, and waiting could cost you. A lot of AC systems are using outdated refrigerants and are being phased out, making repairs harder and more expensive. A&E Plumbing, Heating, and Air, voted Best of the Gorge, is here to help. Right now, get up to $2,000 off a new energy-efficient system, replacing R22 with the latest refrigerant technology. It's better for the environment and your wallet. But don't wait. This deal ends May 31st. Does your system qualify? Call us at A&E Plumbing, Heating, and Air today and stay cool for less.
Are you ready to restore balance, reduce stress, and treat sleep issues with the healing energy of love? Unlock your potential with services that range from chakra healing to spiritual coaching.
Hi, this is Deborah Rashidi with Love Energy Healing, where love and healing come together as one. I look forward to meeting you.
Purchase an energy session and enjoy a free gift. Located at 321 East 10th Street, online at love33energy.com. Or call today at 509-281-2225.
I am Christine Douglas. I work here in patient services at Skyline Health. My main job is registration and answering any questions our patients have. I know when people are here, they're here because they're in pain and they need help. At Skyline, we treat every patient as an individual. I'm here to serve because these are my people, my friends, my kids, and my neighbors. I'm reminded every day of how lucky I am to work in such a close, caring, and beautiful community. I am Skyline.
E-Deals at GorgeRadio.com is where Gorge locals shop for great bargains. You'll save big on local goods and services.
Right now, get a Dallas Athletic Club Gold Family Membership for a year. Normally $1,548, now $948. Or a Skamania Lodge Golf, 18 holes of golf for two on the Little Eagle Putting Course. Normally $40 for two, now $23. Solomon Escape 64 Cross Country Skis, normally is $379, now $199.
Just go to GorgeRadio.com and click on E-Deals. You won't believe the great buys.
Coffee for Mid-Columbia Today guests is provided by Hood River Coffee Roasters, the Gorge's local coffee roasters, on Tucker Road on the Heights in Hood River.
8:57 in the morning on Mid-Columbia Today. What are we doing on Monday? I'm not sure. I got to look this up. Can you tell him? I'm heading toward weekend, aren't I? I'm wrapping this up. Port of Hood River Monday. I know at least Christy Chapman's going to join us, Port Commissioner. And we're also going to talk to the Dallas Area Chamber of Commerce Executive Director, Elise Farquharson. And we're going to talk about Northwest Cherry Festival on Monday, because it is next weekend. Okay, before I get away, I am just completely disorganized today. I don't have everything I think I have in front of me. But anyway, egg hunts, first of all, ours, Lewis Clark Festival Park, 11 in the morning. Columbia Gorge Toyota Honda Bi-Coastal Media Easter Egg Scramble for ages 1 to 10, 11 o'clock sharp. Also, Lyle Lions, they're going to have their Easter Egg Hunt at the Lyle Activity Center Green Space, Highway 14, 10 to noon tomorrow. Kids of all ages, welcome. And also, we've got coming up the Hood River Community Easter Egg Hunt Easter Safety Fair, 10 to noon at Jackson Park in Hood River. Covenant Hood River Easter Celebration, 455 Frankton Road, with an egg hunt, Easter Bunny and Crafts, 1 to 3 there. And Skamania Lodge Easter Egg Hunt is going to be Sunday morning at 8. Front lawn of the lodge, 5,000 candy-filled Easter eggs, 25 will contain prizes. And the hunt's open to everyone, including local families and Skamania Lodge guests. So there you go if you're looking for some Easter egg activity. We are done. I'm Mark Bailey. Have a great weekend. Talk to you again on Monday.
The Mid-Columbia Today Show is a public affairs presentation of Bi-Coastal Media Columbia River. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station, parent company, or of the sponsors. We welcome your suggestions for future shows. Call us at 888-786-1511. Thanks for listening to Mid-Columbia Today.